Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Fair Dinkum Radio. My name is Leon Pittard, and as always, I am your host. The title of our podcast today is Judaism or Zionism. One of the reasons of this podcast is to encourage the thought regarding the influence that Jews have on our society today. I often get emails or articles or links to YouTubes regarding the Jews control everything, or the Jews own all the money, or the Jews control the world, etc. I'm always wary about any sweeping statements about any one class or one group of people that it is claimed control everything. I think the way the world works is much more complex and involves many different players, which of course include Jews. First, a warning. This study will contain references to scripture and history that may offend some people. This is not, however, an attempt to establish biblical doctrine regarding any religion or group, but merely a discussion about the two groups and ideologies behind Judaism and Zionism, and how the modern-day Jew fits into either or none of these two groups. It is also not an attempt to compare the bloodlines of Palestinians to Jews. The term Israel is also another aspect that I do not intend to cover in this podcast. Israel can mean both a physical, historical, or spiritual people. And it is also used to refer to land. So one needs to nominate who or what they are talking about when they use the term Israel. My interest in this subject was born from the fact that I grew up and was taught as a basic Christian in Australia, with a Judeo-Christian Protestant background. While on earth, the Messiah stated that salvation is of the Jews. So the very fact that the Messiah said that salvation is of the Jews should be of interest to any Christian or anyone who believes in the Messiah. Today there is a lot of communication about the role of Israel in world politics and religion. It is a subject that will not go away and should be of great interest to us all interested in the future and events that are taking place in politics, economics and religion. I think that all these chapters of the Trinitarian paradigm are outlined in the following scriptures. I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. Revelation 16:13. To begin with, we need to look at the historical account between God, Yahweh, and his people, as this is where the story began. The idea that Zionism and the State of Israel is the protector of Jews is probably the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the Jewish people. In an effort to understand who is a Jew today, we need to examine both historical records and biblical records. Some of the questions that we'll endeavour to answer are, who is a Hebrew? Who is a Jew? What is Judaism? Understanding contracts with the land of Israel. Who are the Khazarian Jews? What is Zionism and what is its agenda? What influence does Zionism have in society today? And who is it that supports Zionists? The support for Zionists in politics, banking and religion. Christian Zionism, and indeed the Star of David, the symbol on the flag of Israel. What is the symbol on the flag of Israel? So these are some of the questions that we will attempt to answer during this podcast. From the earliest of times, history reveals that the Hebrew people were descendants of Abraham. The Old Testament uses Hebrews and Jews interchangeably. In the book of Esther, Mordecai the Benjaminite is called a Jew, though he is not of the tribe of Judah. In Jonah is called a Hebrew. Some of the earliest references in the Bible to a Hebrew is found regarding the descendants of Eber. Strong's Hebrew dictionary refers to a Hebrew as one of the descendants of Eber. The earliest reference to Eber is in Genesis 10:21, when it says, "Unto Shem also the father of all the children of Eber." In Genesis 14:13, it mentions Abraham. "And there came one that had escaped, and told Abraham the Hebrew." Interestingly, this reference involves Abraham, who happens to be the center of the controversy between Palestinians and Jews today. This initial search from the Bible tells us that the Hebrew people were descendants of Noah, Shem, Eber, Terah, Abraham. It is here that we first see the references to the land of Canaan, where Abraham and Lot, Abraham's cousin, travelled from Ur of the Chaldees into the land of Canaan to a place called Haran and dwelt there. The land of Canaan is today what is commonly referred to as the modern-day Israel, or the Palestinian territories, Lebanon, and the western parts of Jordan and Syria. This land area is found as part of the contract made between God, the God of the Hebrews, Yahweh, and his people. In Genesis 15:18, we read that in the same day, Yahweh made a covenant with Abraham, saying, "Unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates." Notice at this point, the covenant or the contract that was made between Abraham and his seed was made with Abraham and his seed. Between the time of Moses and the days of the Messiah, the Hebrew people used the Torah and the writings of the prophets as a basis for their laws, statutes, and teachings. This basis changed over time, as the Hebrew people were scattered and intermarried with other nations. Gradually, the Hebrew people were influenced by tradition and influences from Western culture. So we need to think for a moment, what is a Jew then? Well, the term and the word Jew has developed over centuries, seemingly from about the 2nd century BC. The word Jew comes from the Hebrew Yehudim. From all accounts, this seems to have developed more so since the 2nd century BC, as mentioned. The first mention of a Jew in the Bible was a Jew by the name of Mordecai in the book of Esther. It states that now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with the king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. This reference helps us see the connection between the term Jew and the captivity, a time when the Hebrew people were scattered from their homeland, the land of Canaan, and carried into captivity into Babylon. From the time of the captivity until the time of the Messiah, the influence of other nations was that the term Hebrew gradually began to be placed with the term Jew. Most people tend to think that the Hebrew people that have morphed into the Jewish people of today, traditional understandings would have us think that today's Jew is a Hebrew. However, the Jewish people of today are not necessarily of Hebrew origin. It is not necessarily correct to say that a Jew is a Hebrew. The Jewish people were dispersed and scattered into many different areas of the globe, including Africa, Egypt, Europe, China, and India. And out of this mix of people comes the modern-day Jewish people. The use of the term Hebrew when referring to the original people has been lost and replaced by the term Jew. However, when referring to the original people and their relationship to Yahweh, Hebrew is the correct term. or when referring to a person that has established bloodlines to Abraham, a Hebrew. Hebrew is the correct term. The term Jew, however, is used to refer to the modern-day composite of people that claim to have come from the Hebrew people, or those that have converted to Judaism, or those that are Zionists. And this is where a big part of the problem today exists. The term Jew tends to be used for all or any of those people. Through intermarriage with other nations and the infusion of different bloodlines, some have a heritage to original Hebrew, but for the majority of those claiming to be Jews today, it is a distant connection. For example, my ancestry comes from France and then into England and then into Australia. What am I? I say an Australian. I do not call myself a French Australian or an English Australian, but an Australian. Even though my ancestry is a mix of Australian, French, English, and who knows what before that. In like manner, today, many people claiming to be Jewish have little or distant ties to the original Hebrew people. And to add to this mix, there are many secular Jews that claim to be Jews that may have come from a variety of bloodlines, but still claim to be connected to the Jewish people, and therefore have a claim to the promises that Yahweh gave the original Hebrew people thousands of years ago. Now let's examine Judaism. In general, Judaism is a religion. It is a religion that uses the Talmud as a basis of doctrine, law, and teachings. Judaism believes that the God of Abraham still has a covenant relationship with those that convert to Judaism. Therefore, Judaism includes people who claim to have converted to that religion. Judaism does not accept that the Messiah has come, nor does it accept that the man known as Yahshua, or more commonly known as Jesus, was the Messiah, or the Son of Yahweh. It is not a religion that all Jews keep or adhere to. For example, there are many Jews that claim they have a connection with the ancient Hebrew people, but they are not a part of Judaism. They may be secular Jews, or they may be Messianic Jews, and not connected to Judaism or Zionism. An important thing to understand is that Judaism is opposed to Zionism. Most people do not understand this. Most people think that to be a Jew means to be a Zionist. I quote, "From its inception, many rabbis warned of the potential dangers of Zionism and openly declared that all Jews loyal to God should stay away from it like one would from fire. They made their opinions clear to their congregates and to the general public. Their message was that Zionism was a chauvinistic, racist phenomenon which has absolutely nothing to do with Judaism. They publicly expressed that Zionism would definitely be detrimental to the well-being of Jews and Gentiles, and that its effect on the Jewish religion would be nothing more than destructive. Further, it would taint the reputation of Jewry as a whole and cause utter confusion in the Jewish and non-Jewish communities. Judaism is a religion. It is not a race, and it is not a nationality. This was and still remains a consensus among faithful rabbis today." Unquote. And so there is a description of Judaism from Jewish people who are faithful to their Judaism and to their Jewish religion, that Judaism is a religion, it is not a race, and that it is opposed to Zionism. Judaism doctrine and ideology is distinct from Zionist ideology. Today, there is a blurring of understanding between the three terms, Hebrew, Judaism, and Zionism. All of these are referred to as Jews. As mentioned earlier, between the time of Moses and the days of the Messiah, The Hebrew people were using the Torah, that is the teachings of Moses and the prophets, as a basis of their law and understandings. However, during the time leading up to the Messiah, many traditions and man-made laws had become established within the Hebrew culture and Hebrew religious teachings, which later were incorporated within the Talmud, which is oral tradition passed on by the rabbis. Many of these traditions were already underway during the time of the Messiah, many of which he condemned. He said, "You lay aside the commandments of God, holding the traditions of men." The whole Talmud consists of 63 tractates, and in standard print is over 6,200 pages long. It is written in Tanakhic Hebrew and Aramaic. The Talmud contains the opinions of thousands of rabbis on a variety of subjects, including law, ethics, philosophy, customs, history, theology, law, and many other topics. The Talmud is the basis for all codes of rabbinic law and is much quoted in other rabbinic literature. Let's have a look at contracts connected to the land of Israel. As mentioned earlier, Yahweh had promised Abraham and his seed the land between the river Nile and the river Euphrates. He promised this to his seed as a place to dwell and raise their families. This was confirmed to Moses prior to him being instrumental in helping them leave Egypt. He said that, "I am come down to deliver the children of Israel out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into a good land, a land flowing with milk and honey." As told in the Bible, after the Hebrews were delivered from Egypt, they wandered in the desert for a period of 40 years. During this time, they were offered a contract by Yahweh to which they agreed. Quite simply, the contract was this. Yahweh made an offer, saying, "If you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people." The people then responded with an acceptance of the offer of contract by saying, "All that Yahweh has spoken, we will do." Now, all contracts are conditional, and a correct understanding of this point really helps us to grasp the difficulties of the current situation. However, many Jews and Christians today claim that this contract still exists, even though history shows us that Yahweh himself told them that they had broken the contract and he was no more bound to fulfill his part of the contract. He had said to them, "Obey my voice." Yet in Jeremiah 11:7-8, he said, "They obeyed not, but they walked every man in the imagination of his own evil heart. I asked them to keep my covenant, but they did not keep them." In verse 9, he said that there was a conspiracy found among the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. He said, "They are turned back to the iniquities of their forefathers, which refused to hear my words, and they went after other gods to serve them. The house of Israel and the house of Judah have broken my covenant or contract, which I made with their fathers." So the contract or covenant was dependent upon them obeying his voice, which they had agreed to do, but later refused and rebelled. His plain statement that they have broken my covenant, which I made with the fathers, establishes the fact that the contract was made. Quite simply, this is the answer to much of the puzzle. Israel abandoned their right to the land so far as God was concerned. Now they fight on a human level without any divine assistance. When the Messiah came to earth, he said, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." Meaning that the house of Israel, the Jewish people, were no longer under divine assistance or guidance. They had chosen to disconnect themselves as a nation from Yahweh. Now let's take a look at some of the developments that have taken place since the broken contract. Israel was taken into captivity by the kingdom of Babylon around the year 586 BC. The Bible records that this took place because of the people's rebellion to Yahweh's ways. Jeremiah said that the whole land would be left desolate and that these people would serve the kingdom of Babylon for 70 years. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon at this time, and during this time, most Jews were in captivity in Babylon. While some had fled to Egypt and others had settled near the Nile Delta, and it seems some remained in other areas scattered in the Middle East. Under Cyrus, the king of Persia, after the expiration of the 70-year period of captivity, many Jews returned to the area known as Judea to build the temple at Jerusalem, and they were given safe passage by the king of Cyrus. This was recorded in Ezra, verse 1 and 2, where the king of Cyrus said that Yahweh had given him all the kingdoms of the earth and charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judea. And so he told the people that whoever would like to return to Judea to build the temple at Jerusalem were willing, whoever was willing and able, could go back and return. And he offered them protection to do this. After the return to the land, and up until and around the year 63 BC, they lived peaceably with surrounding nations, until the Roman kingdom annexed and overtook Judea. It was during this time that the Messiah came to earth and warned the Jews that the temple was going to be destroyed. He said that when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel a prophet, stand in the holy place, then let them which are in Judea flee into the mountains. It was during this time that the Jews, including the disciples of the Messiah, came to believe that the temple and the nation of the Jews would be restored into a controlling position on the earth, and that they would not only control the land of Judah, but possibly the whole earth. However, the Messiah warned that their temple would be destroyed and their nation would be scattered. He said that there would not be one stone left upon another. Again, just before his ascension, they asked him and said, "Will you now restore the kingdom of Israel to its former power and glory?" And he said to them, it was not for them to know the times or the seasons. Subsequently, the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. And once again, the Jews were dispersed into regions surrounding Judea, into Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. From then until the mid-1900s, Jews lived in many different regions, and some assimilated and others were persecuted in mass persecutions such as in Russia and in Germany. Another important point here is that the Jewish people as a whole did not accept the Messiah and continued to, as I mentioned earlier, with the oral traditions that were developing that was to morph into the Talmud today. During the destruction of the temple and the subsequent dispersion of the Jews to all parts of the world, most Jews continued in their traditions, taking them into other countries into which they travelled. Now, a further point that needs to be added to the mix of the developments is another religious group called Christians. Now, we are talking about the time between the Messiah and the first century. Now, the followers of the Messiah were called followers of the way, and the term Christian was only developed centuries later and was largely developed by the infusion of pagan Rome and Judaism. So some of the groups that existed in the first century were traditional Jews that rejected the Messiah, traditional Jews that accepted the Messiah They were called followers of the way. And another third group, that was the development of Christianity. It was the Roman Emperor Constantine that decreed to blend pagan Roman religion with Judaic religion. Some examples of Constantine's actions was the commandment to keep Sunday, the day of the sun, replacing the seventh day Sabbath. And there was a multitude of others we could refer to. G'day folks, it's Fair Dinkum Leon here. I'm the host of Fair Dinkum Radio. We are resistance media, of the people, for the people. We document that there is a conspiracy and an agenda to destroy our national identity, our economic independence, the institution of the family, and our independence as a nation. We are at war with forces within government that are intent on destroying our independence and sovereignty, as individuals and as a nation. I appeal to you, my fellow Australians, to stand with me as we broadcast in resistance to this agenda. Please support us by sharing this website with family and friends and subscribing to help us continue to be a credible voice of the people, for the people. Thank you, friends. Stay tuned and maintain resistance. It is at this point that we need to examine the role of the Khazarian people and their relationship to the project called the Return to the Land, or the Right of Return. And this project that was developed and established by Zionism. There is much attention given to the history of Israel today as we know it. The current warfare between Israel and Palestine is a hot topic. So what makes Israel believe that it has the right to occupy Palestine and eliminate its population? The foundation of this thought is based upon the belief that God has given Israel this land. As previously noted in my position, that Israel broke the contract with God and therefore this claim has no foundation. And further, there are many Jews that belong to Judaism that believe this. Quote, "The Holy Land was given to the Jewish people on the condition they observed the Torah and its commandments. When they failed to do this, their sovereignty over the land was taken from them, and they went into exile. From that time, we are prohibited by the Torah, with a very grave prohibition, to establish a Jewish independent sovereignty in the land, or anywhere throughout the world. Rather, we are obligated to be loyal to the nations under whose protection we dwell." Unquote. There is another layer to this controversy, and that's, as mentioned, the question of the Khazars and the Ashkenazi Jews. No matter where you look, the numbers vary, but it seems likely that the majority of those who claim to be Jews today are from European stock, and many of the descendants of the Khazar Empire. The Khazar Kingdom was found in the area known today as Russia and surrounds in around 600 to 1000 AD. The period when the Khazars had their greatest power corresponded with the European Dark Ages. It was of strategic importance between China on one side and the Middle East and Europe on the other. It was a prosperous kingdom. History records that there was much conflict between Muslim people on one side of their borders and Christian people on the other. At some point in the last decades of the 8th century or early in the 9th century, the Khazar royalty and nobility converted to Judaism, and part of the general population may have followed. The extent of the conversion of the whole population is debated. There are some historians that say all Khazars are Jews, while others tend to believe that it mainly kept to the governing class. It seems that the Khazars saw that it was politically sound exercise to convert to Judaism as a means of belonging to some major group of people and as a means of gathering the population behind the governing ruling class. Much today, like sports, has a team-building psychology built within it. Religion has the same bonding effect, as does the bonding effect within political parties. Now, it must be remembered that the Khazar people were mostly of pagan origin, and this conversion was a political move and not a religious one. The evidence seems to point that it was not a conversion to the God of Abraham, Yahweh, but to the concept of building national identity. Likewise, the Khazar rulers, with a tendency to empire building, began to view themselves as protectors of international Jewry and began to correspond with foreign Jewish leaders. Jews possessing Palestine today is based upon the right of return doctrine. The right of return basically states that any Jew who can claim some sort of Jewish ancestry is able to immigrate to Israel. This is why the Khazar question is of vital importance. Many contentions around this subject are based upon the writings of a Jewish journalist, Arthur Kessler, whose 30-year-old book, The 13th Tribe, claimed that most European Jews were not Semites, but descendants of Khazarians, part of the once Jewish Khazarian Empire, whose nobility converted to Judaism during the late first millennium. In the historical roots of the Ashkenazi Khazars, there incubated a desire to possess a national Jewish homeland. That desire expressed itself in the form of a messianic movement in the 12th century Khazaria that took place on the texture of a Jewish crusade whose goal was the forcible subjugation of Palestine. A Khazar Jew named Solomon Ben Duji features early on in instigating the movement and beginning international correspondence with all the Jews of surrounding nations. It seems that Ben Duji was possessed of messianic delusions of his own, in that he claimed the time had come in which God would gather Israel, his people from all lands, to Jerusalem, the holy city, and that Ben Duji was Elijah and his son, the Messiah. The desire for a Jewish homeland echoed down through the centuries and found expression again. It was among the Ashkenazi Jews, says the Encyclopedia Americana, that the idea of political Zionism emerged, leading ultimately to the establishment of the State of Israel. In the late 1960s, Ashkenazi Jews numbered some 11 million, about 84% of the world's Jewish population. Unquote. So with all the movement of people and populations, there are many that endeavour to claim that certain peoples belong to Israel and others don't. But one thing for sure is that with people moving into other nations, intermarrying, and those other nations, as mentioned, converting to Judaism, there is a genetic mixture that must conclude a genetic link for a person or groups of people is difficult to establish. But the issue here really is this. Even if the majority of Jews today are Ashkenazi Jews from the Khazarian Empire, rather than from the descendants of Abraham, does this give the Jews the right to eliminate the people of Palestine? Now, this is where the question of Zionism comes in. There is a connection between the birth of Zionism and the dispersed European Jews, be they Khazarian or others. But the push to develop the right of return doctrine began with the Ashkenazi Jews and was followed through with by the United Nations, then claiming to be the State of Israel, created by the United Nations decree. They arbitrarily remove that land from the possession of those who have legitimately owned and occupied it for thousands of years. The right to the land is not based upon the hypothetical origins of the Jewish people, nor of the covenant of Abraham with God. It is based on international law, on the United Nations decision to petition Palestine in 1948. 1947, but it was declared in 1948. Arthur Kessler and some other researchers believe that the ruling Khazars were not true Hebrews, but instead Turks who had converted to Judaism. For this reason, Kessler and others suggest that the Ashkenazi Jews, over 90% of those who claim to be Jews today, are really Turks and not of Hebrew origin. So what is Zionism, and what is the agenda of Zionism? Zionism is a movement founded by Theodor Herzl in 1896, whose goal is the return of Jews to Israel, or Zion, the Jewish synonym for Jerusalem, the land of Israel. The name Zionism comes from the hill Zion, the hill on which the Temple of Jerusalem was situated. Supporters of this movement are called Zionists. I quote, "Traditional Jews do not support Zionism, the return to the land called Israel, and why the Zionist ideology is totally contrary to traditional law and beliefs and the teachings of the Holy Torah. The fundamental aim of the Zionist movement has not been to save Jewish lives, but to create a Jewish state in Palestine. We implore and beseech our Jewish brethren to realise that the Zionists are not the saviours of the Jewish people and guarantors of their safety, but rather the instigators and original cause of Jewish suffering in the Holy Land and worldwide. The idea that Zionism and the State of Israel is the protector of Jews is probably the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the Jewish people. Indeed, where else since 1945 have Jews been in such physical danger as in the Zionist state?" Unquote. And that quotation was from Jews Against Zionism. Now, there is a connection with many entities throughout history, including the Bavarian Illuminati, the Rosicrucians, the Russian House of Rothschild, the Shield of David, the Hexagram, and the Red Shield of David, meaning the Red Cross, Zionism, and as mentioned, Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism. These connections need to be examined, as a study of history shows a connection between all of these different entities into Zionism today. Let's think for a moment about the concept of anti-Semitism. It was Theodor Herzl that actually wrote that it is essential that the suffering of Jews become worse. This will assist in the realisation of our plans. "I have an excellent idea," he said. "I shall induce anti-Semitism to liquidate Jewish wealth. The anti-Semites will assist us thereby in that they will strengthen the persecution and oppression of the Jews. The anti-Semites will be our best friends." So that was taken from Theodor Herzl's diary, where he was saying that anti-Semitism will be something that we will use to achieve our goals. Benny Morris, the Israeli historian, stated this: "Herzl regarded Zionism's triumph as an inevitable, not only because life in Europe was ever more untenable for Jews, but also because it was in Europe's interest to rid the Jews and be relieved of anti-Semitism. The European political establishment would eventually be persuaded to promote Zionism. Herzl recognised that anti-Semitism would be harnessed to his own Zionist purposes." Unquote. That was from Righteous Victims, page 21. And so history records that this Herzl, Theodor Herzl, was instrumental in the development of the anti-Semitism doctrine, which today is used against anyone who dares to mention anything about the Jewish people. Anything detrimental about the right of return of the land of Palestine, and anything about Jewish people in general. So if one says that the Jews control the economic interests of the world, in the mainstream media, he is automatically condemned as an anti-Semite. The term anti-Semitism is used as a tool to put fear into people. It is used as a tool throughout society to stop people being critical about anything that may be Jewish. And I quote again from Jews Against Zionism. It said, "The Holy Land was given to the Jewish people on the condition that they observed the Torah and its commandments. When they failed to do this, their sovereignty over the land was taken from them, and they went into exile. From that time, we are prohibited by the Torah with a very grave prohibition to establish a Jewish independent sovereignty in the land, or anywhere throughout the world. Rather, we are obligated to be loyal to the nations under whose protection we dwell." Unquote. So, from historic Jews faithful to Judaism, they do not believe that the right of return into Israel is actually taught by the Torah or the prophets. Rather, they believe that they are obliged to be loyal to the nations under whose protection we dwell. This idea, however, is in complete opposition to Zionism, whose aim is to subjugate the land of Palestine under Zionist rule. And notice I did not say under the rule of true Hebrew people, but under Zionist rule. Let's have a look at the historical progression of Zionism. In 1743, Meir Amschel Bayer, an Ashkenazi Jew, is born in Frankfurt, Germany, to the sons of Amschel Bayer, a moneylender and the proprietor of a counting house. Moses Bayer places a red sign above the entrance door to his counting house. This sign is a red hexagram, which geometrically and numerically translates into the number 666. Which under Rothschild's instruction will end up on the Israeli flag some two centuries later, thus proclaiming himself Kaiser Kabbalist. In 1862, the German Jew Moses Hess published the book Rome and Jerusalem, where he called for a return of Jews to Palestine. In 1893, Nathan Birnbaum introduces the term Zionism. As mentioned, in 1896, the Austrian Jew Theodor Herzl publishes the book The Jewish State, where he declares that the cure for anti-Semitism was the establishment of a Jewish state. In 1897, the first Zionist Congress is held in Basel in Switzerland. In 1917, the Balfour Declaration, issued by the British Foreign Secretary, gives official British support to the working on establishing a Jewish homeland in Palestine. In 1922, Britain gives the World Zionist Organisation the mandate to administer Jewish immigration and settlement in Palestine. This immigration and settlement was funded by American Jews. 1942, a call is issued from Zionist leaders for the establishment of a Jewish state in all of Western Palestine when World War II ends. 1948, the State of Israel is founded. The World Zionist Organization continues to back Jewish immigration to Israel. 1970, the World Zionist Organization puts its muscle into helping Jews in the Soviet Union to immigrate to Israel. It seems that the entire 1914 scheme started rolling its wheels in the 1880s, for it was at about that time also that the Rothschilds began to settle Russian Jews into the Holy Land. And see here what the American Hebrew magazine said just after the war. In 1920, Winston Churchill wrote the following to the Illustrated Sunday Herald. "From the days of Spartacus, Adam Weishaupt, who was a Bavarian Illuminati, to Karl Marx, to those of Trotsky, Balart Kuhn, Rosa Luxemburg and Emma Goldman, this worldwide conspiracy has been steadily growing. This conspiracy has played a definitive, recognisable role in the tragedy of the French Revolution. It has been the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. And now, at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their heads and have become practically the undisputed masters of that enormous Empire. And that was quoted from The Missing Dimensions in World Affairs, Goy, page 92. The following letter by Barak Levy to Marx reflects Weishaupt's dictatorial socialism in the Zionist format. He said that the Jewish people as a whole will be its own messiah. It will attain world dominion by the dissolution of other races and by the abolition of frontiers, the annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. In this new world order, the children of Israel will furnish all the leaders without encountering opposition. The governments of different peoples forming the world republic will fall without difficulty into the hands of the Jews. It will then be possible for the Jewish rulers to abolish private property and to everywhere to make use of the resources of the state. Thus will the promise of the Talmud be fulfilled, in which it is said that when the Messiah returns, the Jews will have all the property of all the world in their hands. Unquote. That was from La Revue de Paris, page 579, June 1, 1928, and I'll leave those references on the site. So what influence do Zionists have in society today? Wherever you look, the numbers differ on how much they do control. Jewish publications boast that Jews worldwide own the majority of banking, media, and Hollywood production corporations. They have extensive influence in politics worldwide. Just think for a moment about the media coverage that you receive in Australia. What percentage shows Israel as the victim? Compare that with the Palestinian people that have been almost entirely wiped out through the occupation of Israel on their land, through the occupation of Zionism on their land. The only reason that Zionists have a right to be on that land is due to a United Nations declaration. There is no mandate from any divine power giving them the authority to remove the people from that land. Further to this is Christian Zionism. Further to the mix of nationalities, genetic bloodlines, and religious ideology that today forms the composite mix called Zionism is that of Christian Zionism. Christian Zionism is a belief among some Christians that the return of the Jews to the Holy Land and the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 is in accordance with Bible prophecy. It overlaps with, but is distinct from, the 19th century movement for the restoration of the Jews to the Holy Land, which has been both religiously, which has both religious and politically motivated supporters. Some Christian Zionists believe that the ingathering of Jews in Israel was a prerequisite for the second coming of the Messiah. Many Christian Zionists believe that the people of Israel remained the chosen people of God. Into this mix is the powerful religious right in the United States that has thrown its weight and influence behind Zionist thinking. Combining with this, the messianic thinking people that still hold that a contract between God and the children of Israel is unconditional, and regardless of their disobedience, that the right of return is God's will, despite it being based upon a United Nations mandate. A further aspect to this whole question of Zionism, which needs to be mentioned, is the symbol on the star of the Zionist flag, often referred to as the Star of David. The first mention of a star in the scripture is in Amos 5:26, when it is regarding the trek from Egypt to Canaan. Then in 922 BC, when Solomon married the daughter of Pharaoh and went into magic and witchcraft and built an altar to Ashtaroth and to Moloch. The book called The Six-Pointed Star by Dr. O. J. Graham traces the six-pointed star from Egypt to Solomon, to Arabian magic and witchcraft in the use from the Druids, and the book traces the star through Freemasonry to Meir Amshel-Bayer, who in the 17th century changed his name to depict the red six-pointed star, which he hung in his door in Germany, and thus began the family of the Red Shield, or the family of Rothschild. The research in this book carries on through this family to the coat of arms, to Kabbalah, to astrology, to Hitler, and to his putting a yellow six-pointed star on all Jews during the Holocaust, to the Zionist symbol, and finally to the flag of the State of Israel and beyond. The six-pointed star, or hexagram, is a Masonic occult symbol. The menorah, not the hexagram, is the true symbol of God's covenant with the Jewish people. There is absolutely no proof that the hexagram was ever used by or associated with King David or the temple he planned and prepared for which was erected after his death by his son King Solomon. The blazing star is properly six-pointed, the sign of the deity, and to make more evident, in the middle of it, it is usually inscribed with the letter G, as in the Freemason symbol. In co-Masonic lodges, the usual form is a serpent curled around with its tail in its mouth. This was the original form, but the head of the serpent was altered so as to form the letter G. The Star of David, as it's so called, believe it or not, is one of the highest Illuminati religious symbols. It is a Star of David with a circle around it, called the Great Seal of Solomon. It is used at the highest level of ceremonies to invite demons to take part. The hexagram is the most powerful of all signs to the occult. It consists of six sides, six points, and six smaller triangles, thus forming the numerical equation of 666. In the Book of Darkness, it says the hexagram is the most powerful and evil sign in Satanism of all the occult world. The hexagram is used mainly in witchcraft to summon demons from the world. The word hex, which means to place a hex on someone or a curse on someone, originates from the sign of the hexagram. In summary, Zionism is a political movement based upon a human mandate determining a right of return. To anyone who claims to be a Jew, regardless of what their origins are, to the land of Palestine. The right of return includes the genocide of the Palestinian people. Zionism is an ideology that uses anti-Semitism as a tool to prevent any criticism of its war machine that is intent on developing a new world order that incorporates Israel as a sympathetic emblem to allow for Zionist control of banking, corporate, political, and religious regimes. Zionism was begun by those that say they are Jews, but are not. Revelation 3:9 says that I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. These people have claimed to be Jews as a political tool, as a sympathy card, and as a good base for developing their war machine. Israel, incorporating Zionism today, is a political war machine. It is thought to have more nuclear weapons than any other nation. It commands political, religious, and financial support from world leaders everywhere, who by their apathy and ignorance or complicity continue to sanction the genocide of the Palestinian people. Its influence on world events with wars, bombings, assassinations, and the continual imperialization of the world, fronted by the UN, NATO, and USA, is unparalleled by any other nation. It is clear that Zionism has a controlling influence on the development of the Global Management Program, or, in their words, their new world order. While I am reticent to say, and hesitant to say, that Jews control everything, as many do, I can state, as I have outlined, that it is the aim of the Zionist regime to control everything. Politics, economics and religion. Whereas I think the reality is that Zionism is a powerful movement that manipulates bankers, governments, religions, peoples, royalty, families, incorporating non-government organisations and institutions such as the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and other similar bodies of world governance like this, to further its political, economic and religious aims of world domination. The Zionist flag, incorporating the hexagram, is a symbol of who is their leader, Lucifer. My commander-in-chief said, "You shall know them by their fruits." If we look at the fruits of the Zionist regime, we see war, we see killings, we see death, we see genocide. The results are clear. Thank you for joining me, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope that this podcast may help you understand more clearly the difference between Judaism and Zionism. My name is Leon Pittard, and I thank you for your time.